All right, Matt, you want to give us a slate?
This is Telluride Part 2. We love it when a plan comes together.
Telluride?
I'll tell you what, ride.
To hell you ride.
He makes a snow up Guar's noses.
Coke dealer to Guar.
So, Mark, maybe we should actually contextualize the bear story a little bit.
Was this last night or the night before? Because I was pretty drunk the first night on Friday night when we got here, so...
Yeah, it was... I think it was last night.
Either way, I was pretty buzzed. I was standing out on the balcony getting some nicotine in my system, and there's like, this little alleyway, like, between... Like, we're on, like, the technically the first floor of a condo building here, but we're actually, like, a story up. And I just see, like, this big shape come out of the bushes. There's, like, a creek or a river or something, like, out in that direction towards the alleyway. But, yeah, I just see this giant thing lumbering out of the bushes. And I'm like, that looks like a bear. And, like, I had about enough time to, like, peek my head in the door and be like, hey, Trevor, there's a bear out here. And he came out and looked, and the bear... like scampered off into the shadows, but
I saw just like it was undeniably a bear. It was a very large, furry, four-legged hindquarter scuttling off into the bushes in the river area.
And it was brown, so I mean, I don't know if it was like a grizzly or a brown bear.
I don't know what kind of bears they get around here.
Probably just a light-colored black bear.
Could have been.
It was big, whatever it was, and like fairly scary looking, but...
Let me ask you guys a question. Where was I when you saw this bear?
You were doing your job and watching a movie.
Yeah, you're in a movie.
Or was I?
Well, you were not here. We know that much.
Or was he?
Oh my God, Matt is the bear.
KOKW calling. I'm on international frequency. Come in.
I am Torgo. I take care of the place while the master is away.
He's trying to cheat us, Pepe. All this talk is so he can get a better price, so he can make fools of us.
Yeah, it's so easy to make a fool of me. Why don't you try it sometime?
Well, I got something done. I got a job at Mr. Greenfeld's sporting goods store, and he promised to do anything he can to help me to get to Texas.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
I had a reason for inviting each guest. I wanted kind of a cross-section. They share one thing. They all need money. Now let's see if they're brave enough to earn it.
And you call this a party?
Could be.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is another live on Memorex edition of the Nighthawks podcast from beautiful Telluride, Colorado. Live and in person in the Ursa Bruin and Kodiak studios is myself, Trevor T. Trujillo, one of your co-hosts for the evening. Another co-host to my left is one Mr. Matt Foster.
I talk into the black fuzzy thing and Trevor makes me more famouser.
And sitting to my right, one of our guest co-hosts for the evening, Mr. Mark Ball, a film auteur in his own right, works a lot in stop-motion action figure filmmaking and action figure photography.
Right. we'll call it that. I kind of play with my toys at 33 and figured out that like they're cheaper than actual actors. So I get complete creative control when like, you know, you don't have like actor egos because they're action figures.
And, you know, we are at the Telluride Horror Show and you're just coming off of Fantastic Fest a couple of weeks ago. This is the second time you've had a bumper in competition at Fantastic Fest that utilized this particular genre.
Yeah, I was starting. I'm apparently starting to get a reputation as the Fantastic Fest stop motion guy, because when they announced that the Phil Tippett documentary was playing at Fantastic Fest, I can't remember the exact title on that, but it was a documentary about famed special effects artist Phil Tippett, who primarily worked in stop motion animation on like Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, and worked with ILM for a long time, and eventually made the transition over to more motion capture stuff for Jurassic Park. And yeah, that's a really interesting documentary. It didn't quite go into, there's the Vice put out another one a couple years ago that got into a little bit more of like the nervous breakdown that he had during Jurassic Park, because he thought his whole career was over because they weren't going to use stop motion animation on that one. But yeah, I saw somebody posting in the Fantastic Fest or Fiends Facebook page, if Phil Tippett shows up, we really need to get Mark Ball to meet him. If that doesn't happen, it seems like the universe is not in line or something along those lines. Phil didn't end up showing up, but yeah, I'm apparently starting to build a little bit of your reputation as a stop motion guy.
Well, that's fun. Well, folks, just to kick this off, let's talk a little bit more just about the festival in general. How is this particular fest leaving you guys?
I like it a lot. It's a nice, it's a little more bite-sized than a whole Sundance or a whole Fantastic Fest. And you just come up and get away to here, where it's very nice.
It's really nice here.
That's kind of what I was thinking. It was a lot more laid back than Fantastic Fest, and I felt a little more not quite so rushed into screenings, and I didn't feel like an obligation really to like pack my entire day full of screenings. Like we got some good stuff here, but like, I mean, I'm not doing the like 4 hours of sleep for 7 days straight kind of deal.
Well, it's kind of cool because like the movies are in discrete theaters. The two of them are like kind of older, historical. I think one even predates movies.
One is an old opera house, and one is the old movie house. And then one is a gorgeous new performance arts facility at the high school that they retrofit into a theater.
And so the whole, I mean, what we're kind of like, the entire town of Telluride proper is only, I mean, a mile long?
Roundabout, yeah.
It's smaller than Manhattan in every way. Except elevation. And so, like, we were very easily able to get some lodgings that were walking distance from the two older showrooms, which are themselves pretty close together. So it's kind of a weird hybrid of the Sundance approach of like shuttling all over to make showings and the, you know, the single theater film festival. And so you do walk around the town a little bit, and a lot of people have really cool dogs.
This is a very dog-centric town, I've noticed.
Not quite so much so as Fort Collins, say, but there were some definite chunky puppers.
Aww. Mark, how's the festival leaving you overall? Like,
I had a great time. I mean, really, I think kind of the only thing that's kept me, because Travis has invited me out to this festival for the last like probably 4 or 5 years, and I've been going to Fantastic Fest for the last 4 years. So really, kind of the timing just wasn't good. Like 2 weeks after. I'm usually super broke at this point, but I did pretty okay at Fantastic Fest this year. I had some money left over, and yeah, I did. There was definitely some stuff that I really didn't want to miss. So made the journey. It was totally worth it. I had a great time out here. Like, this is definitely a beautiful part of the country, and it's this cool little like smaller festival where there's not so much like the red carpet business and like giant gorilla bodyguards like protecting celebrities and stuff. It's a lot more down to earth. Like, you're a lot more likely to rub elbows with the filmmakers at like one of the like bars close by the theater and stuff, like
which happened a couple of times. Yeah. We've had a lot of filmmakers be really generous with their time, and a couple of the guests who have been really generous with their time. Worth mentioning, one of the major sponsors of the festival, itself, by the way, not sponsoring the podcast. They did invite us down, and they did make sure we were able to attend the fest, but they're not, we're not being paid for this. This is not an official endorsement, but it is a very sincere endorsement. But Fangoria is here as one of the sponsors, and as one of the guest presenters, Meredith Borders, who is the managing editor at Fangoria, is here. She's been very generous with her time.
Right.
And it's a really cool, low-key festival. And, you know, it is, it's not just a film festival, and that's something that we talked a little bit about with Ted Wilson. Matt and I interviewed him last week. Unfortunately, that interview wasn't able to be presented on the podcast, but, you know, it's not just a film festival. There's more going on here. This is a horror show, but it is also not a con. It's not some place where you're going to go pay $40 to get your FaceTime with, you know, somebody you admire to get a signed photograph or whatever. Joe Bob was doing some merch on the side and some paid autographs, but he and Darcy the male girl were also very generous with their time outside of a movie if you wanted to talk to them about, you know, what we just watched or some of the theories that they talked about. And so that's one of the fun things about this is just that's what I keep telling people is it's so low-key. It's a low selfie festival. It's a bite size, just right, good getaway. And this is so welcome for me. Matt and I, of course, even for the podcast, had covered a few film festivals and films from film festivals that we attended. But, you know, just life has been getting in the way, you know. These cost money, trips and lodging and things like that. So we hadn't been able to get to any probably in the last 3 or so years. And so this was really welcome for me. This was a breath of fresh air to get and be amongst this community, because this is a really tight-knit group of people. You get that impression. Now, I was kind of doing my first year. I'm just going to watch things from the edges and get the feel here. But this is really a tight-knit group of people. They've been very welcoming. I've just really come to love all the people here from the volunteers on up. And it's a good, good time. And it's so nice here.
We should give a special shout out to the Lord of Triviality.
Yes, one Mr. Brad McHarg, who has been trying to get us to this festival for a while as well. Sometimes pugilist, sometimes film critic, all around nice guy, fantastic beard.
It was a relief to see him get to do his job without his life being in jeopardy.
Yeah, a friend of the podcast, Brad McHarg, who is one of the programmers for the festival, been trying to get us to come down, and he ran the trivia event here, which was the horror trivia sponsored by the Who Goes There podcast. Be sure to check them out, and be sure to check out other podcasts on our podcast network, the Hello Sweetie Podcast Network. Probably give them a shout out too, but and also to find us on Stitcher, Facebook, etc. We did this in the world.
Yeah, we are doing the upfront things now.
It was just, call it a really long cold open.
Hello, sweetie.
What would you little maniacs like to do first?
Hello, little boys, little toys.
A bunch of a-holes.
Guess who's back? Back again. Sweetie's back. Tell a friend.
That's right. Hello Sweetie Podcast is returning with brand new episodes starting August of 2019.
That's right. You heard that correctly.
You can hear us talk about so many things like tiny hats,
thimbles,
turtles,
your mom's house,
the internet,
tiny dogs,
a game you play on your TV,
tiny dogs wearing tiny hats,
little books,
cigarettes,
lots of small things.
What's with the small things?
Talking about the news in the movies,
TV,
the comic books,
music,
video games,
science, and more.
Find us everywhere you found us before, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts,
the internet,
and Google Play.
World's Backest Podcast.
At Push My Buttons Podcast, you can get all the gaming news, information on latest releases, game reviews, and you can even watch us play some of your favorite games. Everything from Sonic the Hedgehog to God of War on YouTube and Twitch. Follow us on all the social media and listen on all your favorite apps. Just search for Push My Buttons Podcast.
We'll get the housekeeping out of the way. Now we can talk about the whole bunch of movies that we saw here.
I did want to give a shout out to Ted Wilson, Grand Poobah here at the festival, and Mr. Travis Voles, who set us up with our press contacts. And really, this festival has just been so accommodating. Really easy to work with, really fun, and the price is right. Like, I don't want to turn this into too much of a commercial for the festival, but one of the reasons I have been unable to go to other festivals is the price points have gotten a little bit higher, and there's nothing wrong with that. Obviously, the festivals have to be able to operate rate and do what they do, and inflation is a bitch. But as far as this festival goes, it's 3 days long. The price point is very reasonable. And really the hardest part, and this is what Ted Wilson told us when he was on the phone with us, the hardest part is it's getting here. You know, there's no real major direct flights into town. You know, you're looking at, as a major hub, probably Denver, and even then you're still 6 hours out of town. It is kind of a schlep to get here, but it's...
That and, lodging is a little bit titchy in the city limits of Telluride, but there are several towns maybe a 5 minute drive away that are not technically in the city that have your standard, you know, Super 8, Motel 6 options.
Mm-hmm. We actually scored a kind of a space sharing gig that's been real good for us.
Yeah, we got a thing off that website that we shall not mention.
It is also bear adjacent for at least one evening.
Yeah, I mean, if you gotta play in Telluride, make sure there's a bear with a fiddle in the bland.
What?
No.
Is Matt having a stroke?
Matt, do you smell toast?
I was trying to riff on the, if you're gonna play in Texas, make sure you have a fiddle in the band.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, taking a look at some of the movies we saw at the festival this year, we talked a little bit about what we saw in our first day last episode. The second time around, you guys caught Making Monsters as your first slot. We discussed that earlier. I managed to sneak into a group of shorts, the Black and Blue Comedy Shorts block, just as advertised. Really great shorts programming for this block. There was nothing here that I didn't like. Everything was fun. Everything was funny. Everything was intriguing. Everything had my attention from the get-go. And this is something that Telluride is kind of known for, is really solid shorts programming. Not only in the film arena, but also our two kind of guest writers in residence for the festival work a lot in short fiction as well. And that's something that I think Matt and I have talked about on the show before, is it's just criminally underappreciated is short film.
I have to do a little name drop, even though I technically didn't get to watch this whole short. I stood in line next to a young gentleman named Octavian Call, and he had a short here called Toe. It was very...
I didn't get to see that. I was really disappointed.
It was very...
the one with like the puppets or something.
It's stop motion, but it's kind of different looking stop motion. And it's a kind of scary stories to tell in the dark, kind of a starving waif eats a toe that he finds, and then the thing wants the toe back. And he showed me some of his previous stuff on his phone and standing in line, and seemed like a pretty ambitious cat. And then I started talking to the person with him that I assumed was his manager or something, and it's his mom. And I guess he is only 16, and they...
Oh, no kidding.
Wow. Yeah, and he was not... He sent his short in at 15.
Oh, wow.
And they accepted it, and they didn't even... And then he's like, kind of like, so I guess I'm going to need to, like, get a ride. And they were both very cool people. It was very interesting to me when I meet someone that, like, they lean into the stuff their kid is into.
Yeah, that's really refreshing.
And not try to hide it, or
be like, don't you want to be a doctor instead?
Take it to the church and burn it. Well, then we got to talking, and I guess he had done a little bit of child acting, and he was like, he was on The Flash for a little bit. It's got to be kind of cool to, like, have a little bit of stuff, but then I'd be so scared of, like, raising a you know, a child star. What would you do? I guess Macaulay Culkin's okay now.
Well, now.
He came through it all right.
Elijah Wood did okay.
Actually, the last couple things I've seen Macaulay Culkin on, like, he's been doing Red Letter Media a lot.
Yeah.
It's like disappointing how normal he is. He's like, I got some weird stuff with my colon, and you know how it is sometimes, guys. Putting your pants on one leg at a time. And you're like, tell some cool stories. Tell us about the Wet Bandits. Okay, I've digressed enough.
You notice you never see the Wet Bandits and the Sticky Bandits in the same room.
You're blowing my mind.
While I was at the shorts, you caught, what are we calling this, 1BR? One bedroom, 1BR?
I am choosing to call it One Bear.
The Telluride Bear.
It is. I think the cast was saying one bedroom. And it is a story about a woman, a young lady who has just moved to Los Angeles, and she's finding it to be a cruel and inhospitable place.
True.
And she gets a sweet deal on a new apartment, and it turns out that maybe the members of the HOA are a little too interested in making sure her life stays on the right track. It takes a few sort of swings at, say, an organization that, for purposes of anonymity, we're just going to refer to as Scientology. And it has some things like I walked out of it, and my one sentence review of it to somebody was, it's like the movie The Master, but things happen.
Huh.
So it's a very
I'd appreciate that.
It's a low supernatural quotient, but high thrill quotient, and there is some stuff in it that while not being as exploitative as like an Eli Roth type of thing, just act in more Tarantino movies. Don't make any more Green Inferno.
Please don't make more
sequels,
Green
Inferno. Sidequels, prequels. Mm. Leave it alone. Mm. Don't touch it. Anyway, but it was there's some stuff in it that like genuinely had the audience like, no, don't. Which is pretty cool when you see a hardened horror audience recoil.
Yeah, that's one bedroom, and it's as written, it is the numeral one, and then capital B, capital R.
Yeah, one BR.
Directed by David Marmor. While you were watching that, Mark and I were catching the new, I guess, horror comedy anthology, horror anthology comedy, some order of those three words, Scare Package, which was actually done by a few friends of the podcast, including Aaron B. Kuntz, who is kind of the overseeing producer and director on one of the segments. Emily Hagen directed one of the segments, the Wunderkind of Zombie Girl fame. And we also had Baron Vaughn in there. We had Noah Sagan turned in a clip. It's basically a spoof satire send-up of the horror anthology movie.
Yeah, it's like each segment is a different horror trope. Like the first one is kind of an extended one that's like the cold open, and it plays a lot of jokes that like your expectations going into this, and like the guy that is basically the cold open, and it's very, very tongue in cheek and very meta. And it kind of goes from there. Like it's kind of a weirdly structured. There's like three or four like kind of standalone segments that play that. I don't know how much to talk about this without spoiling too much, but then there's a wraparound story that kind of finishes the story off, and
the trope of a wraparound.
yeah, it's got real strong like Cabin in the Woods kind of self-aware meta kind of vibes to it. It's got a couple cameos, which we probably shouldn't
yeah
say,
I'm not gonna blow the cameos on this, but there's some fun there's one in particular that's both fitting of this festival and very I think would be a breath of fresh air for a lot of horror fans out there.
People went nuts for that. I had a good time with this. I thought it was a smidge too long. It was really about my only complaint, which is pretty
standard for a horror anthology.
Yeah,
almost wouldn't be funny if it wasn't a little too long.
Yeah, I get that a lot when I watch anthologies. I was like, if this was like one segment shorter, I think it would be a lot better. But all the segments in this I thought were really good. So
yeah, I don't know what I would have left out.
Yeah.
Like all of this works. All of it hits pretty good. I think Aaron Kuntz actually said this in his intro, but it is definitely a movie for fans of horror. It is a movie for people who know this world. It's a movie that the audience for this movie is the one that is aware of these tropes as the movie itself is. Because it's a very self-aware, tongue-in-cheek kind of...
It's not like cynically critical of the horror genre. You can tell it was made by people that like actually genuinely love this stuff and had a lot of fun playing around with it. Kind of, it's not like ever like punching down at the horror genre. I didn't feel like it's definitely made by people that are huge horror fans, and yeah, I had a lot of fun with this one.
You know, it was a movie that was... It's definitely tonally different. But kind of the balance struck between effectively using a trope and the trope being called out. It reminded me a little bit of Found Footage 3D in that aspect. I think Found Footage 3D is definitely more of a horror movie with comedic elements. This is more of a comedy with horrific elements.
Right.
But really what this most acutely reminded me of, and I mean this as a compliment, so I hope anybody listening takes it that way, but it reminded me a lot of The Ten, which was a movie from Paul Rudd was in it, but it was a movie by David Wayne, and it was 10 short films about the Ten Commandments. And even in that, it was a little subversive in how it addressed each of the Ten Commandments, and it wasn't the most readily adaptation you might consider. I got a lot of that here. I got a lot of interconnecting story here. I got people popping in and out of different segments. Like, I really enjoyed this. It was a lot of fun, and I think this is definitely going to be one that's probably on the easy Halloween list in years to come. And the box art for it is amazing. It looks like just a beautiful 1980s VHS box, if you can look up the poster for it.
Yeah, and this was the U.S. premiere, or was this the world premiere? I forget.
This was the U.S. premiere, and a couple of the filmmakers were in-house for a Q&A. Specifically, Aaron B. Kuntz was there. But yeah, this was just a lot of fun. There's a lot of, like, inside humor. There's a lot of referential humor in this. Like, for instance, there's one character who's kind of thrown in who is a dead lift of Johnny Depp from A Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, he is wearing, like, I think the exact same wardrobe.
Right.
So, you know, funny in-jokes like that. And it was a hoot. I laughed throughout the whole thing. Yeah, I think this was a pretty effective film. Matt, you caught Eli. What did you think of Eli?
Eli is pretty good. I don't normally burn a festival watch on something that's coming out on Netflix. To tell you the truth, it was in the theater I was already in, and I was comfortable. And so I was like, you should do one cold every festival. And I watched it, not really knowing a great deal about what it was about. The premise is that the young lead is, I believe he's somewhere probably early teens, and he has that, that oft romanticized or dramatized condition where you have to live in a completely sterile environment. The crude term would be the bubble boy disease. You've seen it in
movies. In media.
Movies of the week with John Travolta and episodes of Seinfeld with Trivial Pursuit involved. I'm sorry, the card says moops. But so he's under these extra conditions, and they're taking him to see a specialist, and the specialist's clinic is in a retrofitted old, like, kind of manor house. And it's very spooky, and he begins seeing things at night.
Hey, I'm Haley. I live down the road.
I'm Eli.
You say you're what, like, allergic to the world, right?
I guess I could say that.
We looked everywhere for a doctor to help you.
You're gonna get better.
Promise?
Promise.
Hello, Eli. I'm Dr. Horn.
Hello.
I hope you don't think of this as a medical facility. To me, it's a home. And for now, it's your home.
Oh, it's been so long.
Everything we hoped for is right here. Shall we begin? What do you think is making you sick?
Lots of things. The air, water, dust.
Eli is going to get worse before he gets better.
There's something in my room.
Bad dreams are a side effect. It's perfectly normal.
And there's some dispute as to if it's a side effect of his medication, because they're trying to cure him with gene therapy, or if the place is actually haunted. And it's the great, the back and forth is, you know, should his parents believe him or not? And should you, the audience, believe him or not? And it actually takes a pretty intriguing left turn in the third act. And I don't want to go even near spoiling it for anybody, so...
You know, I noticed that was almost a trend at this festival, is like a lot of the twists are earned and I sincerely don't see them coming. Like, this was a good year for movies catching me by surprise. Mark and I caught VFW. Or Matt, you were there too.
Yeah, we all.
We all caught VFW. This movie.
Because once a festival, you should all do one together.
Yeah.
And we picked a good one to watch with buds.
Yeah, this was a good buddy watch movie, especially if you're a fan of genre. Comes from to us from Joe Bagos, kind of a genre darling up and coming right now, doing a lot of really good exploitation, kind of low budget.
Kind of an unapologetic entry into the assault on Precinct 13 kind of dread.
Yeah, definitely a siege movie for sure. I mean this in a complimentary way. I don't know. Like, feelings are pretty divided on this, but I got, like, if Hobo with a Shotgun took itself a little more seriously and then hopped into a blender with, like, Green Room, there's some of that in here.
Kind of. The basic synopsis here is that in some tumble-down city of the near future, or perhaps an alternate now, we're treated to a lot of decay porn in the beginning, like a more tumble-down area of, say, Detroit, or I believe he ultimately said it was filmed in Irving, Texas.
Dallas. Most of the city was Dallas, and then like a couple of the exteriors were a little Irving's out on the...
Irving's a neighborhood of Dallas, mm-hmm. Yeah. But I guess the slate at the end of the movie thanked the people that own the VFW in Irving, Texas.
Yeah.
So I jumped to that conclusion.
There was an actual VFW used for the interior, and then the exterior was a dressed set that they found that was geographically convenient for the story.
As a former HIV clinic, I'm pretty sure.
That's right. Yeah.
So the short pitch here is that there's a very Mad Maxian, very kind of, there's a new drug on the streets.
Hype.
And the distributor for it is holed up in a multi-story, in an abandoned megaplex, actually. And they've cleared all the theater seats out, and it's their shooting gallery in the middle there, and the drug lord lords over everything from the mezzanine.
I noticed that Bliss was on the marquee, which is Joe Bagos' other movie that I think they shot like on the leftover money from VFW.
Then another one is Cyborg 2, which is a so bad it's good movie from the days of yore. And so what happens is, to get revenge for her sister, a member of the drug lord's kind of entourage, or I don't know, customer group, whatever you'd call it, but an inhabitant of the squat at the theater, she takes his shipment of drugs and she's going to just deny it to him so that he can't give it to the guy that wants to buy it, so that all his business connections are soured and a gang war erupts and she gets him killed without having to do it.
And this is a drug that the withdrawal seems to make people go a little violent.
Well, so he tells everybody that they can have all the hype they can handle if they bring her in. And so this mob of 100 or 200 people starts chasing her. And she runs across the street into the closest open door, which happens to be the local VFW run by one Stephen Lang.
This cast is incredible, because you've got Stephen Lang, he runs the VFW post. You've got his motley crew of regulars, which includes Fred Williamson. You've got William Sadler in there, and the incomparable George Wentz holding up the end of the bar as he is wont to do. However, I do want to throw out a specific note that the Norm iconography is not played up here, and I think that was one of the most refreshing aspects of George Wentz's performance, is that he was not there to be Norm. He was just a guy at a bar, and I don't even know that there is a scene or a shot in the movie of him just at the end of the bar with a beer in front of him. And since that seems to be kind of what George Wendt gets asked to do a lot, it was really refreshing to see him in a bar atmosphere not mugging on that joke.
Right.
Well, and so what happens is, of course, when the 80s punk-style gangsters come across into the Vietnam Veterans VFW, there is an immediate cultural and literal clash. And it's if you as a kid ever went to like the video store and you rented you rented one of those what was the one with the H.R. Giger cover,
Future Kill.
Yeah, like if you ever rented an 80s movie and the cover and the poster led you to believe you were getting something other than what you were getting, this is the movie that you were thinking you were renting.
That's pretty accurate, actually.
That's beautiful,
because
man.
The stuff splatters, stuff explodes, and by stuff I mean people. And there's booby traps, there's a gearing up montage, there's improvised munitions, there's some pretty satisfying fisticuffs. There's a little bit of everything, as long as by everything you mean exploitative action.
Yeah, and this is like unapologetically an exploitation movie. It is exploding heads. It is ultra-violence. It is ultra-violence to the point of being satire.
Willfully intentionally humorous practical effects.
Yeah, satire is maybe not the right word for it, but definitely humorous.
Self-aware.
Played for the joy of the audience.
Yeah, let's say self-aware.
There you go. But, you know, just a really fun movie. And one of my favorite parts of the movie wasn't even, like, the genre aspect of it. Like, the group of buddies in the VFW has such a fantastic chemistry that I would almost just watch the Tarantino movie of them talking at a table for 2 hours.
Yeah, like, I was distinctly reminded of The True Romance. He reminded me of Ben Grimm. He told a good antidote. You know? But and the one you missed, Martin Cove.
That's true.
Master of the Cobra Kai in another life. Actually, still in this one, I believe. I think he shows up in Cobra Kai, doesn't he?
I believe so.
I haven't watched all that, but what I've watched has been a hoot. The Karate Kid revival on YouTube.
Yeah, this is probably, I think my favorite movie of the festival probably would have to go to After Midnight. But this was definitely up. Like, I think After Midnight was the best movie of the festival for me. This movie was probably my favorite, if that makes sense.
in the sense of I had the best time watching it, I'd say it's tied with Tucker and Dale.
Yeah, for sure. I even kind of took Tucker and Dale out of contention.
Tucker and Dale was the 10-year anniversary showing of it, and it was the closing night movie for the first Telluride Horror Festival. So it was very closing your loop, you know. And so it was kind of a shout along, like, not to the degree of like a Rocky Horror or something, but it was a very
rowdy
light spirit in the auditorium. I'm gonna go and say I liked most of the movies I went to.
Here it comes.
The only one I had like a real like that I would.
We're gonna get in a fight.
I would say is for a purist is probably Wounds.
Oh, okay, maybe not.
Like Wounds is a very strange movie about a bartender in New Orleans who is dating a woman that's doing her master's at Tulane, and she's doing it on kind of C.S. Lewis and the Hollow Men. And, you know, kind of the occultism of early New Orleans. And meanwhile, he's just tending bar and kind of having a flirtation with a regular. And after a fight breaks out at the bar, a cell phone is left at the bar. And the cell phone has pictures of it that are kind of on it that are kind of, they're kind of dark web snuffy. And at first the guy, like, he wants to return the phone and then he wants to go to the police. And then what happens is it turns out the pictures on the phone are actually kind of prophetic. Some of them are of things that have not happened yet that start to happen to him. And then it gets very psychedelic, very occult, and it has kind of a weird, it's kind of a weird choice is made at the end. And I don't know. It's one of the ones where if you're not into like a hardcore kind of possession movie with some squick in it. I don't know if it's like...
It's quiet
in
here tonight.
Yeah,
one of the kids.
Who were you talking to last night?
There was these college kids. They left a cell phone there. And I went through it to see whose it was. You don't want to see it. You don't want to see it. It's awful.
It's not one where I would just tell, like, if you like any given horror movie, you just go to it. Go to a Sunday matinee of it. And it's also not like I'm building it up too much and making it sound good. Like, I'm making it sound like it's so extreme, and it's also not quite that.
So let's put it on the Matt granularity scale then. If we're going to give it a scale of 1 to
62.
10.
62.
With 1 being Nightmare on Elm Street, where he is an implied molester, and 10 being Serbian film, which we won't even discuss, where would you put it?
The problem with it is that what we're actually shown of the dark, gritty graphic content is, like, it's graphic enough that if you thought it was real, you'd call it cop, right? Like, it's severed heads and people that are clearly murder victims and stuff, you know, like, but it's also kind of like live leak tier stuff where maybe you wouldn't call a cop if you thought it was 10 years old and from another country and you didn't want to look like an idiot. So, like, you kind of, like, you don't hate the guy for not calling the cops, but then the things that unravel are kind of, like, It builds really good atmosphere, and then the release at the end is very strange. And so I have trouble giving it like a hard grade. But that was my one that I was kind of like, oh, maybe that was a little too advanced for me. I don't know.
Well, before we wrap things up for this particular coverage of the Telluride Horror Show here in beautiful Telluride, Colorado, where it's just really nice. There's a movie, I want to bring this up because I want to have time to talk about it, that I think we have some mixed opinions on, maybe. We'll try and discuss this as non-spoilery as possible, and any subsequent spoilers will be edited for content. So.
Well, something called Mitchell.
It's better than Mitchell. Okay, so we saw kind of our final film for the festival was The Lodge, which is from a pair of filmmakers who also made Goodnight Mommy, which was a similarly toned film. I may have underplayed this when we first walked out of the theater. Just judging by the temperature of the conversation, I may have understated. I actually really, really liked this. It's dark. It's not a feel-good movie. It's a movie that's going to have you feeling, giving you a pretty good emotional gut punch by the end. I guess the basic setup is that it is a woman and her soon-to-be stepchildren who are in kind of a contentious early part of their relationship are trapped in a mountain lodge during a snowstorm, and mysterious things start happening.
Possibly connected to her background in a cult.
So,
the deprogramming from which is how she met her new husband, their dad.
So, how would you feel about going to the mountains for Christmas with Grace? She really wants to get to know you guys.
That's our mom's hat.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You okay? I don't want to leave you here with the kids if you're not feeling up to it.
I'm feeling fine. It was my idea and it took a couple days. I can do a couple days.
Okay, guys, I'm off. Have fun.
What is that?
It's Grace.
Everyone committed suicide except for her.
Repent and you will find salvation.
Guys! Things are very uncomfortable between us, and we're stuck in a house together. What is this? The power's out. Where are my things? It makes no sense. What? I heard something.
Repent your sins.
This one, you guys weren't as in love with, though.
I think I clocked a little too much of it too early, and I just sat there going like, okay. I did have one, it's so hard not to spoil. I did have one thing that I thought happened. I was correct about it happening, but I was wrong about the party that did it. I'll put it that way, and that'll make sense to you after you watch it, which I can't say you shouldn't do because it was actually pretty... I guess I'm gonna sort of take the lane I took on Joker, which is the filmmaking is too good to say don't watch it, but the payoff was not quite for me, and not for the time invested. A comment I had about it is it would have made, if they still made hour-long horror, like if there was any place for that, like it would have made a great Outer Limits or something. Mark, what did you think?
I really liked the atmosphere of this movie. I'm a total sucker for horror movies that take place in the snow, and especially when you get like isolated and like trapped in a place. I'm usually a huge sucker for those. I'm kind of with Matt in that, like, I don't know if the payoff for this movie worked exactly for me. It wasn't really what I was expecting. I think, like, just based on the trailers, I think it leads you in more of like a spooky haunted house kind of horror movie. And really this is a real slow burn kind of, and a lot of it is very psychological because, like you said, this whatever our protagonist basically is like, she has to take medication to overcome like
some trauma,
some stuff that happened to her in the past. And so that's like one horror trope that I feel like I've seen in like every other horror movie that I've seen this year, is the, was it all in their head? Like how much of this is
That and dollhouses. It has dollhouses. Everything since Heredity has dollhouses.
Yeah, I've seen dollhouses in miniatures in like every, and I don't think I've really had anything. You could have left that part of out of it out of this movie, and it still, like, it didn't really.
They're never cool miniatures. They're never like the Emperor's Space Marines.
Yeah, this one is like, yeah, like dolls. Like, did you guys see the episode of Creepshow with the the first one? Like, yeah, that was that was like the whole plot in that episode. And this one, the dollhouse, has little to nothing to do with it. But yeah, this is kind of a hard movie to talk about without like spoiling a bunch of stuff. But I don't know. I feel like I walked out of it hating it because it has like, it is just kind of like a downer, depressing movie. But the more I'm thinking about it, kind of, I thought it was very effective. And it definitely got a huge response out of the people in the crowd. They're actually like really quiet for a good chunk of the movie, but there's a few parts where like everybody basically squirmed and got uncomfortable and had like a pretty good theater reaction to this. So I don't know.
It does have some content. Like, there are a couple things that are like, while they're not the most graphic thing that's ever been put into a horror movie, it does have some kind of borderline domestic squabbles.
Yeah.
Mm. And it does have some borderline abuse there. And it does have
a lot of self-harm.
Yeah. The old Fantastic Fest trope of the dog score. There is a dog in peril in this movie.
What'd you guys think of the cast? Cause I was actually fairly impressed with every performance in this. We've got Alicia Silverstone. We've got Richard Armitage. We've got, Riley Keough, Elvis's granddaughter, is in this. And Jaden Martell, who most people would know as Stuttering Bill from, the It Chapter One and Young Bill in It Chapter Two. And I was actually really impressed with Riley Keough in this. I thought she gave a really fantastic performance, but almost more so because even though Jaden Martell gave just as good of a performance, that's almost more impressive for how young he is. But he was right there keeping pace with her. And I don't know. I liked the movie, so it's easier for me to say that these are really fantastic performances. What do you guys think?
I thought everybody did great in this.
That's why I can't tell people, like, don't buy a ticket. I definitely, there was enough on display here that I didn't like want the $10 back, you know, had I bought a ticket at a theater. I was pretty like, and it's the opposite of Avatar. I'm warming up to it the longer I think about it.
It's just not a movie you can go into thinking you're going to walk out like having a grand old time. Like, it's not like the It remake where, yeah, you're going to get your bang for your buck. Scare wise, basically, it's not really about that. It spends a good chunk of this thing like building dread, and then it kind of saves like the story payoffs like till the very end, kind of. And it's very like dour and kind of downbeat and a little bit depressing, to be perfectly honest. But yeah, I'm kind of with Matt. Like, the acting and the production are both like really on point. So,
well, and the rubric we usually use on the show is, would you recommend this to somebody? And I absolutely would recommend this to the right people,
to horror fans mostly.
Horror fans, but specifically, like, if you have seen Goodnight Mommy and that was in your lane, if that's something you enjoyed, this is more of that. It's more of that tonally. It's not a deadlift. Like, it's not like if you saw Goodnight Mommy, you're not going to get quote unquote more of the same, but it is definitely the same tonally. There's some not necessarily content overlap, but like, it's in a real similar vein. Like, these ladies are working a theme here, and I'll let the audience draw those conclusions, but I really enjoyed this. It's dark, it's sardonic, it's not kind. That's also another reason I don't know that I would recommend it to everybody of whole cloth, but it's definitely over the hump for me. I got my movie ticket out of it. I thought it was a good way to go out on the fest. It is a dark and depressing movie, which is why we're going to the party afterwards. Right. But I really enjoyed it. So, I don't know.
One more I gotta mention that I actually saw without you guys.
Uh-huh.
I went to something called Sweetheart. And Sweetheart is a shipwreck movie with a supernatural element, which I actually kind of loved because, like, both genres are projective, right? Like, half the time you're watching a horror movie, you'd be like, I'd turn around and deck him in his face. And then half the time you're watching a shipwreck movie, you're like, don't throw away that coconut. You can use it to collect water, you know? And so both of those projections going on at once was pretty cool.
Hello!
the lead actress that carried most of it by herself. Her name is Kiersey Clemons. And she's not someone I was real familiar with. And for you know, someone that had to... she was in Dope. She was in the Flatliners remake. She's done some voice acting and stuff. But she is someone that, like... Someone decided to center a movie around. They kind of gambled on an unknown, and she's great in it. And like her, the whole the title "Sweetheart" is because it was like she was kind of the whipping person in her group of friends, like the one they all dumped on that was too poor to be on the yacht with them in the beginning. And so that was what her boyfriend condescendingly called her, was "Sweetheart," and she ends up being kind of diehard on an island and not as sweet.
I did want to give a shout out specifically to one of the shorts I saw that I really just fell in love with. Really quick, really short, and I certainly hope this shows up somewhere where people can catch it. But it was a little animated short that showed in the Black and Blue comedy shorts block. And they do intend Black and Blue as being black humor and blue humor. These are ribald. These are adult-oriented. These are not for the kids. But the one I specifically wanted to call out was Wild Love, which was an animated CGI short. The look of it, it's insincere to compare it to Pixar or Disney because they definitely have something going on their own stylistically. But it is a story, kind of a classic man versus nature story that involves a loving couple and an angry wildlife. And it's hilarious and dark and wicked and delightful. So hopefully that gets out sometime soon. I believe that was a school project for a group of students, and it just came out wonderfully. Mark, any others that we didn't touch on that you wanted to shout out?
I saw one that I don't think either of you guys saw called The Deeper You Dig, which was a really interesting first time, they're not first time filmmakers, but this is their first horror movie. It's a mother, father, and daughter filmmaking team called, I think their last name is Adams. Really interesting, kind of avant-garde, like you almost like would get the impression that these guys are not huge horror fans, but they somehow made a really interesting, effective, different kind of horror movie. The premise of it, which most of this I think you can get from the trailer, a girl is out sledding late one night.
I need to report a missing person. Echo Allen, she's my daughter. Coat is gone and her sled is gone. But if she went sledding, she didn't come back.
We're looking for your neighbor's daughter, 14-year-old girl. She's been missing since last night. Have you happened to see her at all?
No.
Echo Allen. Ring any bells?
No.
Not familiar at all?
No.
On the night that Echo disappeared, she reached out to me from the darkness.
That's a mother's intuition.
But then she revealed to me a sign of the seven circles. Tell my mother what you've done.
It was an accident. It could have happened to anyone.
The seven circles are unforgiving. They are locked in grief. They will warp everything within them. And for you, who's turned her back on her calling, you will pay dearly.
I'll pay.
She lives with her mother, who's like a medium type person. She does like tarot readings and is kind of a... She has legit like medium kind of powers, but she's kind of starting to lose her sight, as she puts it. So she's basically acting, she's dipping a little bit into con artist territory, and a lot of the movie is her trying to figure out what happened to her daughter. That's kind of where I'll leave it at that one. It was a little bit like Autopsy of Jane Doe, and
ooh,
there's,
I like that one.
There's a little bit of Twin Peaks kind of vibe in there, because
I like that one.
I think it's shot in Canada, and it all takes place in like the wintertime and out in the woods and stuff.
Now, you were saying this was like an interesting family dynamic with the filmmakers.
Yeah, they basically do everything like as the three of them. They shot it. They all three act in it. They play the three leads. They did the music for it themselves. Like, they're basically doing everything as like the three of them. And I thought it was really interesting, especially because the mother and daughter play mother and daughter in the movie. And you can kind of get like a pretty like... They're all excellent actors, like considering I think they haven't really done all that much. I think this was like their fourth or fifth feature, their first horror feature. But yeah, just really interesting. Like lots of weird imagery, lots of like interesting dream sequence. The sound design was really cool. Like a lot of just like feedback and noise type of scoring to it. Really cool horror movie. Like I saw a lot of horror movies this year, and I can legitimately say none of them were really like this. I think probably the closest thing I saw at Fantastic Fest to this was a movie called Climate of the Hunter, which is also made by kind of a weirdo off. That's the opposite. That's a guy that's made like 100 movies at this point that nobody has seen.
Horror Frank Zappa?
Kinda, yeah. Like, you almost get the impression like maybe they've never seen a horror movie before because it's just so far removed from any kind of tropes or like anything really that you've seen. And at its core, it's basically a ghost story, but like not like, you know, like it's another thing. Like, usually I don't really get that down with ghost movies, and a lot of them are just not that good to me, but this one kind of knocked my socks off.
See, I like supernatural stuff that gets away from the reality show ghost hunting rules,
quote right. unquote. Yeah,
you know, I have my EMF detector, and I turn the night vision camera on. There it is.
Like, put me in a circle of salt quickly.
This was not had way more to do with like the occult, and like her like tarot cards were like played a big part in it, and like her stuff as a medium.
I really like watching the trailer. It made me think of a Dark Song.
I didn't see that one, but I remember that coming out.
Another one about like some actual kind of, I won't say actual because what's actual as pertains to this topic, but someone did some research as to some actual things and made a more informed movie than just like the Google, what's a lycanthrope?
You know? This one did that too. Yeah, there seemed to be a whole lot of like mythology around like the afterlife and like what happens to us and all of that stuff. So like and it plays it completely straight. Like it never really comes up in conversation. Like, I mean, they kind of hint that maybe she's like kind of greasing her clients a little bit harder than she should be, especially considering she doesn't really give any results because she is, quote, losing her sight. But I love this one. This was another one that played Fantastic Fest. I knew a couple of other people saw it and really liked. So I don't have any idea about distribution on this one. But if it comes out, check it out. It was really... Like, I want to see these guys make more horror movies because they have a really unique perspective on all of it, I guess.
All right, gentlemen. Well, I think that's about going to wrap it up for the Nighthawks coverage of the Telluride Horror Show. Any final thoughts about the festival in general or any of the films you saw, guys?
I didn't see anything I strongly disliked. Everything we saw, I at least, like, really appreciated. And some of the stuff I really love, so... Yeah, this has been a great. It's very nice here.
Yeah, it was very.
It's very nice.
Let's say the festival is well curated.
Mm-hmm.
It's very approachably sized. It's very nice.
It's a nice place and a nice festival.
But if you can get here geographically, it's a great great way to dip your toe in the festival world.
Yeah, that's about the only hump I have to get over is the travel. But it's something I certainly hope we can come back next year in some capacity. But yeah, I was really, really fond of this time. This was fun.
I think, too, the irony is we live just far enough away we live just close enough that we didn't fly. And that would probably, like, if you were just coming from Vancouver, you know, who cares? You're just going to fly the whole way.
All right, gang. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for us here at the Nighthawks Podcast, our very special on-location episode covering the Telluride Horror Show. Big thanks to Ted Wilson, Travis Voles, Brad McHarg, Joe Bob Briggs, Diana Prince, Joe Begos, Josh Ethier, Aaron Kuntz, a bunch of people who have been really good about their time with us and talking with us and making this a really special experience. Big thanks to Meredith Borders. Big thanks to Fangoria for being here and sponsoring the festival. Big thanks to all their sponsors, too numerous to name, but some of them include Pabst Blue Ribbon and
Heineken.
Pabst Blue Ribbon. Yeah, it's quiet time because it's almost morning. So we're going to wrap things up. I'm going to call it an evening. Be sure to find us on Facebook. Find us on Spotify. Find us on Apple Podcasts. Find us on Google Podcasts. And if the podcatcher of your choice happens to have the option to leave us a review or a rating, you would be doing us a hell of a favor by doing so. And join us for more coverage. Be sure to check out some of our older episodes. Mark, I believe you were on our Monstoberfest from 2018, where we covered Child's Play. And then I believe you were also in our episode from 2016 covering Fantastic Fest.
Yep.
So you can check those out. Mark, where can people see your horror photography, your horror action figure photography?
You just definitely follow me on Instagram. It's fancy_Mark. That's usually where the stuff goes first, and where definitely like a lot of the stop motion video and stuff goes. You can follow me on Twitter. It's the Fancy Mark. I usually post like kind of the same stuff. I've been trying to keep up on Letterboxd reviews. I got like most of the stuff I saw on Fantastic Fest up on there in like short little bite-sized kind of reviews. I'm pretty sure that's just Fancy Mark or fancy_Mark on
Letterboxd. Yeah, Matt and I are going to have to get back into Letterboxd. I missed that. That was a fun...
I refuse. It's not a contest.
Very well. Very well. All right, Matt, any final thoughts from you? Anything to plug?
Go do stuff like this. Even if you can't go to this one or that one or the big one or the one in Spain. Or
God, I'd love to go to the Stitches.
Like, go do something like this. I bet, you know, your local film society has a one-day one or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to see movies in a auditorium full of attentive people with their phones off. And that alone can be worth it if you're an addled purist like me. You're sitting there and you're just wanting to lash out at people in the Cinemark. Like, could you just stop rustling? Why you gotta rustle? Can't you take the cellophane off it in the lobby? You're trying to do it all sneaky and quiet. You're not fooling anybody. We all know you're trying to unwrap candy. Just pull the trigger. Get it over with. Rip the Band-Aid off. Put the cookie dough bites in your face. I guess that's my final thought.
Lot to chew on
because of the cookie dough bites thing. I see what you did there.
I throw popcorn at phone in the theater people nowadays. Like, if I can see you in the row in front of me on your damn phone in the middle of a movie, I will throw popcorn at the back of your head.
I'm just texting. It's not loud.
I will still throw popcorn at you.
This is the magnified states of America.
If you continue after I throw popcorn at you, I'm probably gonna get up and get a fucking manager.
I feel bad for that. Like, even then, like, it's not.
Yeah, the 15-year-old, 90-pound manager.
That's, yeah, it's not totally some high school kid's job to go tell, like, a surly Karen and her six friends that have had their white claws that they need to be quiet.
During Magic Mike.
And they're just going to make more noise squawking about it.
All right, gang. Well, if you have the opportunity to check out the Telluride film, the Telluride horror show, it's a high recommend from me. And that's about going to wrap it up for us here at the imaginary Nighthawks Cafe, where for the first time in history, all the denizens are actually physically present in one location. The very generous and beautiful Ursa Bruin and Kodiak Studios in beautiful downtown Telluride, where it's just really nice. And
shout out to the bear.
Yeah, shout out to the bear.
The bear was a highlight of the whole show. Like, you can't get that at other festivals.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've been to some festivals with wildlife at them before. It's not like a copywritten thing, you know. I mean, they're animals. They can go wherever they want.
It was a new experience for me, for sure.
Oh, quick shout out to Love Light Acupuncture. They are Airbnb hosts, and they're spectacular folks.
Wonderful.
Super
folks.
Mellow.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I think that's going to wrap it up for us, because it's almost morning.
So goodbye, everybody, and remember, please, for the next day or so, the terrible lesson you learned tonight. That grinning, glowing, globular invader of your living room is an inhabitant of the pumpkin patch, and if your doorbell rings and nobody's there, that was no Martian. It's Halloween.
This is a Hello Sweetie Podcast Network production.